Welcome to the Daily Radio Bible. My name is Luz Lutchman from Long Island, New York. The day is Tuesday, April 18th, and we're reading through the Bible.
Thank you so much, Luz, and welcome to everybody out there. My name is Hunter, and this is the Daily Radio Bible. And if you're new here to this podcast, we try and keep things real simple here. We simply read through the Bible. And over the course of a year, we will read through the Old Testament once and the New Testament twice. But more important than that, we're letting God's Word do a little reading on us, letting the Word search our heart and to renew us, make us new, to renew our minds in the gospel. And so we do that every day, and God shows up every day, and He speaks. Today we're going to listen hard as we go into the book of 1 Samuel chapters 20 and 21. And then we move on to Psalm 34, and we finish our reading in Matthew's Gospel, chapter 5. We're reading through the New Living Translation. Let's jump right in. 1 Samuel chapter 20, Jonathan helps David. David fled from Naoth in Ramah and found Jonathan. "What have I done?" he exclaimed. "What is my crime? How have I offended your father that he is determined to kill me?" "That's not true," Jonathan protested. "You're not going to die. He always tells me everything he's going to do, even the little things. I know my father wouldn't hide something like this from me. It just isn't so." Then David took an oath before Jonathan and said, "Your father knows perfectly well about our friendship. So he has said to himself, 'I won't tell Jonathan. Why should I hurt him?' But I swear to you that I am only a step away from death. I swear it by the Lord and by your own soul." "Tell me what I can do to help," Jonathan exclaimed. David replied, "Tomorrow we celebrate the new moon festival. I've always eaten with the king on this occasion, but tomorrow I'll hide in the field and stay there until the evening of the third day. If your father asks where I am, tell him I asked permission to go home to Bethlehem for an annual family sacrifice. If he says fine, you will know all is well. But if he is angry and loses his temper, then you will know he is determined to kill me. Show me this loyalty as my sworn friend, for we made a solemn pact before the Lord. Or kill me yourself if I have sinned against your father. But please don't betray me to him." "Never," Jonathan exclaimed. "You know that if I had the slightest notion my father was planning to kill you, I would tell you at once." Then David asked, "How will I know whether or not your father is angry?" "Come out into the field with me," Jonathan replied. And they went out there together. Then Jonathan told David, "I promise by the Lord, the God of Israel, that by this time tomorrow, or the next day at the latest, I will talk to my father and let you know at once how he feels about you. If he speaks favorably about you, I'll let you know. But if he is angry and wants to kill you, may the Lord strike me and even kill me if I don't warn you, so you can escape and live. May the Lord be with you as he used to be with my father, and may you treat me with the faithful love of the Lord as long as I live. But if I die, treat my family with this faithful love, even when the Lord destroys all your enemies from the face of the earth." So Jonathan made a solemn pact with David, saying, "May the Lord destroy all your enemies." And Jonathan made David reaffirm his vow of friendship again, for Jonathan loved David as he loved himself. Then Jonathan said, "Tomorrow we celebrate the new moon festival. You will be missed when your place at the table is empty. The day after tomorrow, toward evening, go to the place where you hid before and wait there by the stone pile. I'll come out and shoot 3 arrows to the side of the stone pile as though I were shooting at a target. Then I'll go send a boy to bring the arrows back. If you hear me tell him, 'They're on this side,' then you will know as surely as the Lord lives that all is well and there is no trouble. But if I tell him, 'Go farther, the arrows are still ahead of you,' then it will mean that you must leave immediately, for the Lord is sending you away. And may the Lord make us keep our promises to each other, for he has witnessed them." So David hid himself in the field, and when the new moon festival began, the king sat down to eat. He sat at his usual place against the wall, with Jonathan sitting opposite him and Abner beside him. But David's place was empty. Saul didn't say anything about it that day, for he had said to himself, "Something must have made David ceremonially unclean." But when David's place was empty again the next day, Saul asked Jonathan, "Why hasn't the son of Jesse been here for the meal either yesterday or today?" Jonathan replied, "David earnestly asked me if he could go to Bethlehem. He said, 'Please let me go, for we are having a family sacrifice. My brother demanded that I be there.' so please let me get away to see my brothers. That's why he isn't here at the king's table." Saul boiled with rage at Jonathan. "You stupid son of a whore," he swore at him. "Do you think I don't know that you want him to be king in your place, shaming yourself and your mother? As long as that son of Jesse is alive, you'll never be king. Now go and get him so I can kill him." "But why should we put him to death?" Jonathan asked his father. "What has he done?" Then Saul hurled his spear at Jonathan, intending to kill him. So at last Jonathan realized that his father was really determined to kill David. Jonathan left the table in fierce anger and refused to eat on the second day of the festival, for he was crushed by his father's shameful behavior toward David. The next morning, as agreed, Jonathan went out into the field and took a young boy with him to gather his arrows. "Start running," he told the boy, "so you can find the arrows as I shoot them." So the boy ran, and Jonathan shot an arrow beyond him. When the boy had almost reached the arrow, Jonathan shouted, "The arrow is still ahead of you! Hurry! Hurry! Don't wait!" So the boy quickly gathered up the arrows and ran back to his master. He, of course, suspected nothing. Only Jonathan and David understood the signal. Then Jonathan gave his bow and arrows to the boy and told him to take them back to town. As soon as the boy was gone, David came out from where he had been hiding near the stone pile. Then David bowed 3 times to Jonathan with his face to the ground. Both of them were in tears as they embraced each other and said goodbye, especially David. At last Jonathan said to David, "Go in peace, for we have sworn loyalty to each other in the Lord's name. The Lord is the witness of a bond between us and our children forever." Then David left, and Jonathan returned to the town. 1 Samuel 21. David runs from Saul. David went to the town of Nob to see Ahimelech the priest. Ahimelech trembled when he saw him. "Why are you alone?" he asked. "Why is no one with you?" "The king has sent me on a private matter," David said. "He told me not to tell anyone why I'm here. I've told my men where to meet me later. Now what is there to eat? Give me 5 loaves of bread or anything else you have." "We don't have any regular bread," the priest replied. "But there is the holy bread which you can have if your young men have not slept with any women recently." "Don't worry," David replied. "I never allow my men to be with women when we are on a campaign, and since they stay clean even on ordinary trips, how much more on this one?" Since there was no other food available, the priest gave him the holy bread, the bread of the presence that was placed before the Lord in the tabernacle. It had just been replaced that day with fresh bread. Now Doeg the Edomite, Saul's chief herdsman, was there that day, having been detained before the Lord. David asked Ahimelech, "Do you have a spear or sword? The king's business was so urgent that I didn't have time to grab a weapon. I only have the sword of Goliath the Philistine, whom you killed in the valley of Elah," the priest replied. "It is wrapped in a cloth behind the ephod. Take that if you want it, for there's nothing else here." "There is nothing like it," David replied. "Give it to me." So David escaped from Saul and went to King Achish of Gath. But the officers of Achish were unhappy about his being there. "Isn't this David, the king of the land?" they asked. "Isn't he the one the people honor with dances, singing, 'Saul has killed his thousands and David his 10,000s?'" David heard these comments and was very afraid of what King Achish of Gath might do to him. So he pretended to be insane, scratching on doors and drooling down his beard. Finally, King Achish said to his men, "Must you bring me a madman? We already have enough of them around here. Why should I let someone like this be my guest?" Psalm 34. A psalm of David regarding the time he pretended to be insane in front of Abimelech, who sent him away. "I will praise the Lord at all times. I will constantly speak his praises. I will boast only in the Lord. Let all who are helpless take heart. Come, let us tell of the Lord's greatness. Let us exalt his name together. I prayed to the Lord and he answered me. He freed me from all my fears. Those who look to him for help will be radiant with joy. No shadow of shame will darken their faces. In my desperation, I prayed, and the Lord listened. He saved me from all my troubles, for the angel of the Lord is a guard. He surrounds and defends all who fear him. Taste and see that the Lord is good. Oh, the joys of those who take refuge in him. Fear the Lord, you his godly people, for those who fear him will have all they need. Even strong young lions sometimes go hungry, but those who trust in the Lord will lack no good thing. Come, my children, and listen to me, and I will teach you to fear the Lord. Does anyone want to live a life that is long and prosperous? Then keep your tongue from speaking evil and your lips from telling lies. Turn away from evil and do good. Search for peace and work to maintain it. The eyes of the Lord watch over those who do right. His ears are open to their cries for help. But the Lord turns his face against those who do evil. He will erase their memory from the earth. The Lord hears his people when they call to him for help. He rescues them from all their troubles. The Lord is close to the brokenhearted. He rescues those whose spirits are crushed. The righteous person faces many troubles, but the Lord comes to the rescue each time. For the Lord protects the bones of the righteous. Not one of them is broken. Calamity will surely destroy the wicked, and those who hate the righteous will be punished. But the Lord will redeem those who serve him. No one who takes refuge in him will be condemned. Matthew chapter 5. The Sermon on the Mount. One day, as he saw the crowds gathering, Jesus went up on the mountainside and sat down. His disciples gathered around him, and he began to teach them. God blesses those who are poor and realize their need for him, for the kingdom of heaven is theirs. God blesses those who mourn, for they will be comforted. God blesses those who are humble, for they will inherit the whole earth. God blesses those who hunger and thirst for justice, for they will be satisfied. God blesses those who are merciful, for they will be shown mercy. God blesses those whose hearts are pure, for they will see God. God blesses those who work for peace, for they will be called the children of God. God blesses those who are persecuted for doing right, for the kingdom of heaven is theirs. God blesses you when people mock you and persecute you and lie about you and say all sorts of evil things against you because you are my followers. Be happy about it. Be very glad, for a great reward awaits you in heaven. And remember, the ancient prophets were persecuted in the same way. You are the salt of the earth. But what good is salt if it has lost its flavor? Can you make it salty again? It'll be thrown out and trampled underfoot as worthless. You are the light of the world, like a city on a hilltop that cannot be hidden. No one lights a lamp and then puts it under a basket. Instead, a lamp is placed on a stand where it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your good deeds shine out for all to see, so that everyone will praise your heavenly Father. Don't misunderstand why I have come. I did not come to abolish the law of Moses or the writings of the prophets. No, I came to accomplish their purpose. I tell you the truth, until heaven and earth disappear, not even the smallest detail of God's law will disappear until its purpose is achieved. So if you ignore the least commandment and teach others to do the same, you will be called the least in the kingdom of heaven. But anyone who obeys God's laws and teaches them will be called great in the kingdom of heaven. But I warn you, unless your righteousness is better than the righteousness of the teachers of religious law and the Pharisees, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. You have heard that our ancestors were told, "You must not murder. If you commit murder, you are subject to judgment." But I say, if you are even angry with someone, you are subject to judgment. If you call someone an idiot, you are in danger of being brought before the court. And if you curse someone, you are in danger of the fires of hell. So if you are presenting a sacrifice at the altar in the temple and you suddenly remember that someone has something against you, leave your sacrifice there at the altar. Go and be reconciled to that person. Then come and offer your sacrifice to God. When you are on your way to court with your adversary, settle your differences quickly. Otherwise, your accuser may hand you over to the judge, who will hand you over to the officer, and you will be thrown into prison. And if that happens, you surely won't be free until you have paid the last penny. You have heard the commandment that says you must not commit adultery. But I say anyone who even looks at a woman with lust has already committed adultery with her in his heart. So if your eyes, even your good eye, causes you to lust, gouge it out and throw it away. It is better for you to lose one part of your body than for your whole body to be thrown into hell. And if your hand, even your stronger hand, causes you to sin, cut it off and throw it away. It is better for you to lose one part of your body than for your whole body to be thrown into hell. You have heard the law that says a man can divorce his wife by merely giving her a written notice of divorce. But I say that a man who divorces his wife, unless she has been unfaithful, causes her to commit adultery. And anyone who marries a divorced woman also commits adultery. You have also heard that our ancestors were told you must not break your vows. You must carry out the vows you make to the Lord. But I say, do not make any vows. Do not say by heaven, because heaven is God's throne. And do not say by earth, because the earth is his footstool. And do not say by Jerusalem, for Jerusalem is the city of the great king. Do not even say by my head, for you can't turn one hair white or black. Just say a simple yes, I will, or no, I won't. Anything beyond this is from the evil one. You have heard the law that says the punishment must match the injury, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I say, do not resist an evil person. If someone slaps you on the right cheek, offer the other cheek also. If you are sued in court and your shirt is taken from you, give your coat too. If a soldier demands you carry his gear for a mile, carry it 2 miles. Give to those who ask. Don't turn away from those who want to borrow. You have heard the law that says, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say, love your enemies. Pray for those who persecute you. In that way, you will be acting as true children of your Father in heaven. For he gives his sunlight to both the evil and the good, and he sends rain on the just and the unjust alike. If you love only those who love you, what reward is there for that? Even corrupt tax collectors do that much. If you're kind only to your friends, how are you different from anyone else? Even pagans do that. But you are to be perfect, even as your Father in heaven is perfect. May God add his blessing to this, the reading of his word. Amen. Jesus is heading up the mountain, and there he's going to deliver his most well-known message, the Sermon on the Mount. Matthew wants us to draw some comparisons with Moses. Moses and Mount Sinai, and Moses' message from Mount Sinai was the law, the Ten Commandments, and Jesus wants us to know very clearly what the purpose of the law is, and Matthew wants to help us with that by drawing this comparison between Moses and Jesus. Matthew wants us to know that Jesus is a far better Moses, but Jesus wants us to know that he has not come to abolish the law of Moses. No, he says, I've come to accomplish its purpose. And this is so important that we understand. We have to understand the purpose of the law in our life and in this world. The law is not the path that we have to take in order for us to be made right with God. Keep the commandments and God will keep you. No, that's not the purpose of the law. Yet that is how so many of us understand it. Jesus is doing two things here. He's making sure that there's no doubt that we understand what the law is actually saying. The standard of the law is perfection. This chapter ends with Jesus saying, be perfect as your Father in heaven is perfect. See, the standard is not just with your actions. It's with your attitudes and your motivations. All of these things have to be perfect. And Jesus says things like this. He says, you've heard it said, don't commit murder. Well, I say, if you harbor anger in your heart, you've already committed murder. See, Jesus doesn't let us outthink the law and find the loopholes that we all think we can find to justify ourselves before God and others. No, Jesus makes sure that we understand that there are no loopholes. Perfection is the standard. Be perfect as your Father in heaven is perfect. Now, here's where the purpose of the law is seen. Its purpose is not a pathway to justifying ourselves before God. It's not a means of salvation. So why then was the law given? Well, Galatians 3:19 says it very clearly. It says it was given to show people their sins. You hear that? The law is good. It shows how badly we need God. It shows us that we are all law breakers. We are all in need of someone who can live a life free of breaking the law. I need a substitute. I need someone who can do it because I cannot. And that person, my friend, is Jesus. Again, in Galatians 3:19, it says that the law was designed to last only until the coming child who was promised. And that child, my friend, grew up to be a man who we see teaching here on this mountain. And he's inviting all those who know that they are sinners, who know that they are lawbreakers, the poor in spirit. He's inviting all of them to come to him, to look to him. And this promised child who is now a man preaching on that mountain will one day climb another mountain, a place called Golgotha, the place of the skull. And there he will offer himself as a sacrifice to atone for the sins of all the lawbreakers. And there he will make us right with God. And when he is raised to new life, he'll offer us his presence, his spirit to dwell in and through us, so that we might be released to live a life that's free of the penalty of the law, free to live the life God has always intended for us to live, free of guilt and shame, and free from the crushing demands of the law lived in the flesh, now free to live by the spirit of this man dwelling in me, enabling me to live the life we're all meant to live. And that can happen if we want to. We can have that life if we want to. A life where we're free. A life where we have power to live in a new way. A way that goes beyond mere actions and actually has an effect on attitudes and motivations, getting to the very heart of the matter, creating change and transformation even there. And that's the prayer for my own soul today, my friend, is that I'll rejoice in the one who fulfilled the law's purpose for me and who now gives his spirit to me. That's a prayer I have for my family too, for my wife, my daughters, my son. And that's my prayer for you. May it be so. Well, dailyradiobible.com, that's where we hang our hat out here in the interwebs, and it's always such a cool thing to hear from you. So if you got a moment, take it and let a brother know. It'll bless you. It really will bless you. And it will bless me too. No doubt about that. There is a measure of selfishness in that request. No doubt about that. But you know what? I am convinced of this, that there is a blessing in giving a testimony. There really is. So, hey, how about telling me a little bit about how God's using this little podcast in your life, or just how God is moving in your life, changing, transforming you. Hey, here's another request. Sign up for our newsletter. You can do that right on the app itself. Just click on that link. Sign up for the newsletter. And here's another request. Like our Facebook page and share our posts on your Facebook wall. That's such a huge help in letting other people know about this work. What's going on here? Another way that you can do that very simply is by sharing the app. Sharing is caring, my friends. So share the app. We've made that really simple. All you have to do is click on the link there on the podcast itself that says share the app, and you're off and running. Well, hey, that about does it. We've done it again. We have spent another day in the Bible, and I plan on being back here tomorrow to do the same thing. Lord willing, and the creek don't rise. I fully intend to be here at this makeshift office here in the basement of my house in the Queen City of Cincinnati, Ohio, right smack dab here in the heartland. Your brother Hunter will be coming back to you from the heart. Until that time, let's go forward in God's joy. Let's let his joy be our strength. And let's remember this, that you, my friend, are loved No doubt about it. All right. Hey, I'll talk to you again tomorrow. You take care.